It is my great honor and pleasure to be here at the Collège de France and present this lecture to my esteemed colleagues. Thank you, Professor Granet, for the invitation. The founder of the Manichaean religion, Mani, is the earliest Iranian historical figure noted in Iranian sources as a painter. By the 15th century, Mani the painter became a standard reference in the artistic world of Central and West Asia, to whom the best artists were routinely compared. The fascination with Mani and his book of pictures, the Ardang, as it became known after its Parthian name, coincided with a growing admiration for individual artists across Iran at that time. This reverence towards Mani is captured on a Safavid album leaf housed today in the British Museum that was produced in Isfahan sometime at the end of the 16th century. In this type portrait, Mani is shown as a senior painter who casually steadies the page on his knee and dips his pen into a Chinese porcelain inkwell as he is about to start his work. Mani, however, was also known across the Iranian cultural region as a pre-Islamic prophet whose teachings were deemed false. The earliest Iranian record of Mani's life is given by Firdausi in his Shahnameh, composed around 977. Firdausi does not mention the Book of Pictures, only that Mani, the false prophet, was also an image maker. In sharp contrast with this sympathetic depiction of a beloved artist, the focus of Firdausi's story is on Mani's dealing with King Bahram, son of Shapur, which culminates in Mani's death. The earliest known luxurious edition of the Shahnameh that contains an illustration of Mani's story survives from Ilkhanid Tabriz. In it, the anonymous painter creates a powerful composition. His visual narration centers on the human skin stabbed with straw hanging from a palm tree, along the vertical axis, pushing the middle third of the image up into the text area, where it is crowned with a gilded title line. There are no Sasanian historical records on how Mani died, aside from Manichaean sources, some of which might be contemporaneous with Mani's death or date from the late 3rd century. They tell what happened differently and do mention the Book of Pictures. These Manichaean sources suggest, that after a series of debates, Bahram imprisoned Mani at Gondeshapur. His disciples were allowed to accompany him. They observed and recorded how on the night before his planned execution, Mani wrote a final letter to his community and then died, upon which his most precious belongings, including his garments and two books, were taken to his successor. The latter details are known from a Parthian text that purports to be an eyewitness account. The relevant sections in Werner Sundermann's translation read, "After the parinirvana of the apostle, Uzi the teacher gave his testimony to the whole church, with regard to what he had been observed among the soldiers. For that Saturday night, he, Uzi, had been left there with the Apostle of Light. After Mani's death, his gospel, his book of pictures, that is the Ardang, his garment and his hand were brought to the province of Lacuna and handed over to Sisin, who succeeded Mani in heading the Manichaean church until his own martyrdom in 291. Although there is no direct evidence of relic worship in Manichaeism, the fact that these items were preserved alludes to such a function. Most importantly for my subject today, this text suggests that Mani's own copy of the Book of Pictures was one of the highest-ranking objects that connected the church to its founder. By referencing two types of books, a book with texts, the Gospel, and the book with images, the Book of Pictures, this text also suggests that unlike other world religions, Mani's religion consciously involved not only written resources, but also a pictorial resource, an important distinction that remains characteristic to Manichaeism throughout its history. Accordingly, Mani's Book of Picture is attested from all phases of Manichaean history, starting from mid-3rd century southern Mesopotamia, from where Mani's teachings quickly spread within the Roman and Sasanian empires already during Mani's life. Along the trade routes of Central Asia, they reached the realm of the Turkic-speaking Uyghurs, whose ruling elite adopted them, and also the capital cities of Tang China during the Tang Dynasty, from where during the mid-9th century persecutions, they were spread to the south, where Mani's religion existed, probably into the late 15th or maybe as late as the early 17th centuries. From this, within circa 1,400-year history, the last evidence of a Manichaean community having a book of pictures is from 12th century southern China, where in the port city of Wenzhou, in the year 1120, a government official inventoried the possessions of a fully Sinicized Manichaean temple and listed the titles of 6 silk paintings and 13 books. Number 5 on the list of books was the Tu Ching, the Book of Pictures. The only other Chinese record of the Book of Pictures is from the early 8th century, found in a document that gives a full description of the Manichaean religion to the Chinese court while requesting permission to spread Mani's teachings in the capital cities of the Tang. But my presentation today is not concerned with the Chinese world of Manichaeism. My focus will be on the Mesopotamian roots of Manichaean book culture, with special attention to its book formats. I argue that the solely pictorial books of the Manichaeans, various editions of one book with images authored by Mani, were part of the Mesopotamian-rooted book culture, just as the textbooks, the picture book of the Manichaeans, possessed codicological characteristics that developed during the early era of the history in Mesopotamia and Western Iran. In order to support this claim, the first third of my lecture today will explore textual sources from late antiquity, dating from between the mid-3rd and late 5th centuries, about how, where, and why Mani's Book of Pictures was used. The second third will be devoted to the physical remains of the Book of Pictures from the Uyghur era. These remains, I suggest, also maintain Syro-Mesopotamian characteristics. And finally, the last third of our time today will explore comparative examples of book format, such as the horizontal scroll and the horizontal codex, evidence from late antique and early medieval Mesopotamia, the Mediterranean region, and greater West Asia. The earliest Manichaean work of art surviving today is connected to the Manichaean canon, to one of the textbooks, Mani's Book of Epistles. Remarkably, it is the very seal stone Mani used to authenticate his letters, preserved today here in Paris, in the collection of ancient medallions and coins in the Bibliothèque Nationale de France. This seal is ground into a cabochon, a convex shape with a perfectly circular base. It features an intaglio or a sunken relief on its round surface, while its flat side is smooth. This rock crystal is a one-of-a-kind object among the hard stone seals of late ancient Iran. Its colorless quality and thin profile are both utilized in creating a double-sided object that fulfilled a dual function. The convex surface with the negative carving functioned as a stamp seal. To use this crystal as a seal, its convex part had to be pressed completely into the wet clay, leaving only about 2 millimeters from the crystal, which is not enough to hold it. This fact positively confirms a metal setting now lost, which must have been valuable since it was forcibly removed, causing a fracture. The flat side functioned as an engraved gem with a legible text and a positive image visible beneath a thin layer of crystal. This double-sidedness and large size confirm that this seal could not have been part of a ring, but was most likely a pendant seal, several of which survive from Sasanian Iran, mostly from high-ranking contexts. Mani's seal stone is inscribed in the Syriac language using the Manichaean script in a radial design beginning at 5 o'clock and proceeding counterclockwise to identify its owner as Mani, Apostle of Jesus Christ. Syriac, the language, is also called Aramaic, and this, of course, is the language of Mani's writing and much of early Manichaean literature. Although it does survive on this seal and some small fragments from Egypt, most early Manichaean texts, which are only known in later translations, were originally also composed in Syriac. This fact leads to my use of the term Syro-Mesopotamian to label the cultural and geographical roots of Manichaean book culture throughout this lecture. The phrase on this seal, Mani, the Apostle of Jesus Christ, is also used in the starting formula of Mani's letters, which began with the phrase, with the statement, I, Mani, the Apostle of Jesus Christ, and continues by adding that all the saints, that is the male elects, and virgins, that is the female elects, who are with me, before starting the actual letter. Fitting the engraved visual message is the reference to two groups of elects on this seal in Mani's company. They most likely allude to the male and female elects. Mani's letters were collected by his disciples in the Book of Epistles, as I mentioned, and became part of the Manichaean canon. Thus, some of their texts survive partially, but as to be expected, the actual letters do not. I think I'm behind by one click here. So this is what I was supposed to show you in connection with how Mani's letters started, with the male and female elects referenced. And then I'm supposed to show you now the images of the scrolls that are comparative examples to Mani's letters. Since Mani's letters do not survive, I use two sets of comparative examples. One on the screen is a set of letters on a vertical parchment scroll from Abbasid era Arabic letters in the collection of the Turkish and Islamic Art Museum in Istanbul, dating from the 10th or 11th centuries, at least 700 years after Mani's time. About 60 years after Mani, around 350 of the Common Era, this format was also chosen for the Greek translation of the epistles of Pachomius, housed in the Chester Beatty Library in Dublin. Therefore, between these two examples, we can be quite sure that this format was familiar to the Manichaeans in Mesopotamia. In religious studies scholarship, Mani's books are thought about as the canonical books of the Manichaeans. According to the Coptic homilies, they included 8 textual books: the Gospel, the Treasury of Life, the Pragmateia, the Book of Mysteries, the Book of Giants, the Book of Epistles, the Book of Palms, the Book of Prayers, and 1 pictorial book, the Book of Pictures. Writing books and altering a collection of images is noted about Mani in primary sources, such as in the 151st chapter of the Kephalaya, of the Berlin Kephalaya, which quotes Mani as follows in Ian Gardiner's translation. My church is superior in the wisdom and the secrets which I have revealed to you in it. As for this immeasurable wisdom, I have written it in the holy books, in the great gospel and other writing, so that it not be altered after me. Just as I have written it in books, so I have also ordered it to be painted. For all the apostles, my brothers who have come before me, have not written their wisdom in the books as I have written it. Neither have they painted their wisdom in the book of pictures as I have painted it. My church surpasses the earlier churches also in this point. In this passage, Mani claims that the reason behind creating his books and his paintings was to safeguard the authenticity of his teachings in two different ways, in written form and in painted form. This unique and dual approach to communication is noted about Mani in polemical accounts as well. Ephrem Cyrus, a Syriac Christian theologian who lived within a century of Mani, sharing with him a common language and culture, quotes directly from a Manichaean source and credits Mani's disciples as his sources of information. When he writes in his prose refutation, given here in Joan Reeves' translation, according to some of his disciples, Mani also illustrated his doctrine using pigments on a scroll. He accordingly states, "I have written my teachings in books and illustrated them in colors. Let the one who hears about them verbally also see them in the book of pictures, and the one who is unable to learn them from words, learn them from the pictures." Ephrem points to the oral context of Mani's sermons and notes that the paintings were meant to assist those who hear the teachings verbally and who are unable to learn them just from the words. He mentions that besides the books, Mani had a collection of pictures that captured the teaching in visual means. In it, the teachings were illustrated in colors and in visual form. He confirms that it was called the picture by using the Syriac version of a Greek loanword icon, and that it was in the format of a scroll. It is important to note that neither the Kephalia nor Ephrem writes about illuminated manuscripts. They discuss books that contain texts and a solely pictorial book, a picture book, the format of which is stated by Ephrem as a hand scroll. Mani's book culture originates in mid-3rd century southern Mesopotamia in and around Ctesiphon, the Parthian Tisphon. This city was the political center of the Sasanian Empire, the administrative seat of the province of Babylon, an important hub of trade leading to India via the Persian Gulf and to China via Bactria and East Central Asia. It was also the metropolitan city of the Persian Christians, the seat of the chief rabbi of Iran, and soon an important Manichaean center until the late 8th century, when Baghdad took its place. Tisphon was a vibrant center of culture and learning, as reflected in Mani's knowledge of sciences, the arts, as well as his familiarity with Greek philosophy, besides Christian, Jewish, Zoroastrian, and Buddhist teachings. From late antiquity, 13 sources are known to mention Mani's Book of Pictures. The Parthian and Middle Persian accounts are the earliest. They include letters, some dating back to Mani's time, documenting key events related to early church history. The Coptic accounts are produced within the first 150 years of Manichaean history and include materials issued by the Manichaean church from Mesopotamia. The one Syriac language account by Ephrem Cyrus was written within 80 years of Mani, as we have seen. Taken together, these 13 ancient sources convey that a southern Mesopotamian prophet, Mani, wrote his books and commissioned to have a book of images painted for him, most certainly in Ctesiphon. He used the images as visual aids for teaching. Already during Mani's time, multiple copies of his books, including his book of pictures, were made, as documented by these sources. Among the 13 texts, only Ephrem mentions that Mani's book of pictures was in the format of a scroll. Five of them note a total of 7 locations where the book of pictures was used, as shown on this map by the green marks. The blue marks indicate additional places of Manichaean missions conveyed by other ancient texts, which do not mention the Book of Pictures. Taken together, these sources convey that Mani and his followers had a distinct understanding of what a book was. Under book, they meant a portable medium made from locally available materials and locally known formats used for storing records of thoughts or ideas. The records themselves could be verbal, that is, written by using a suitable visual language and writing, writing system and language. But the records could also be visual, and in some cases exclusively visual, painted or drawn in a locally available painting style and a locally comprehensible iconography. Visual records may be organized as diagrams in order to illustrate structure, as icons or portraits to show the likeness of something, or as narrative scenes, which is the most common version in religious art, in order to reflect time, change, or the sequence of events. Thus, the 13 ancient sources confirm that Mani communicated his doctrine in two ways: verbally, in a written form, in either scrolls or codices, and visually, in a painted form, in a picture book, later editions of which survive in two formats, as horizontal scrolls, and in one case, as a horizontal codex. Remains recovered from Egypt attest to a sophisticated Egyptian book culture dating between the late 3rd and late 5th centuries, but the Egyptian records do not contain evidence for Mani's Book of Pictures, only textual material. An example of a Greek Manichaean parchment codex from 5th century Egypt is housed today in the papyrus collection of the University of Cologne in Germany. Although damaged, the book is almost complete and clearly legible. It is a biography of Mani, told on 48 bifolia that were distributed into 8 quires with 6 bifolia in each quire. Imagine this codex in pristine original condition with 96 folia, that is 192 pages, but in a size of a matchbox, measuring only 4.5 centimeters in height. The Cologne Mani Codex, as it became known, is truly a miniature book. It is considered to be the smallest ancient codex known today. A new codicological study about it is forthcoming by René Falkenberg. An example on the opposite scale, an example of a Coptic Manichaean papyrus codex produced between the late 4th and early 5th centuries in Egypt survives today in the Chester Beatty Library in Dublin. I'm showing the recto of one of the folia and one of the wooden covers recovered with the stack of pages from Medinet Mahdi in Egypt. This codex retains the text of the Kephalaya, one of the earliest surviving pieces of Manichaean literature, and mentions the Book of Pictures several times. It was written by an unnamed early disciple in order to preserve Mani's oral instructions. The manuscript itself is fragmentary, but relatively well preserved. With its 180 pages, this book is among the thickest ancient codices known to date. It was relatively large, as indicated by the 35-centimeter high wooden cover that survives with it. The edition and translation of this highly damaged codex by Ian Gardiner, Jason Bedun, and Paul Dilley is in press already and is about to be published in 4 volumes by Brill. Unlike such books with texts, the picture books of the Manichaeans do not survive from West Asia, which brings me to the second part of this lecture, the physical remains of later editions of Mani's Book of Pictures. So let's take a look. For these, one must turn to a phase of Manichaean history that emerged under Uyghur royal patronage between the mid-8th and early 11th centuries. While spreading along the trade routes, the Manichaean mission, with its Syro-Mesopotamian book culture, reached the oasis cities of East Central Asia, at least by the 7th century. Initially, funds for artistic activities must have been limited, as suggested by the modest quality of secular and Buddhist art documented in the region prior to the arrival of the Uyghurs. This situation dramatically changed when Mani's teachings were introduced to the ruling elite of the Uyghurs, starting from 755 and culminating in the conversion of the great Uyghur Khan Bogu in 762. At that time, during the era of the steppe empires, the Uyghurs controlled the trade routes from their capital at Karabagasun, also known by its later Mongolian name as Ordubalik. After the collapse of the steppe empire in 842, the Uyghurs moved southwards into the Tarim Basin and established a smaller Gansu Uyghur kingdom around the east of Dunhuang, and the larger sedentary kingdom with Kocho as its winter capital. Kocho was the main mercantile and agricultural center of the region and the seat of a Manichaean bishop. Uyghur patronage and protection resulted in an unparalleled flourishing of Manichaean activities in and around this city. Located in what is today the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region in China, the mud brick ruins of Kocho became an archaeological site when German expeditions explored it between 1902 and 1914. Although these led to the discovery of a significant number of Buddhist and a few Christian artifacts, Kocho turned out to be most famous for its Manichaean finds, the vast majority of which are housed in the Turfan collection of the Asian Art Museum and the Oriental collection of the State Library in Berlin. They include circa 5,000 manuscript fragments, about 120 high-quality artistic remains, and the ruins of these two buildings, marked here on the map, securely identified as Manichaean by their wall paintings. Their cluster of rooms belong to two manistans. The manistan is an institution of learning, ritual, and medical care established by Mani himself. Based on its function, it may be best compared to either a temple complex, but built on a modest scale and with a library and an infirmary in it, or maybe better to a monastery, but without a permanent sacerdotal living quarters. The elect lived with the auditors, who hosted them for short periods of time in return of gaining social prestige and merit for a good rebirth. A primary source lists five halls that together constitute a manistan: a library, a meditation hall, a ritual hall, a lecture hall, and an infirmary. It does not mention a scriptorium, which might be due to the fact that this text dates from 731, before the golden age of Manichaean book production in the region, before the Uyghurs' need emerged for creating and using luxurious service books that contained liturgical texts. Well, books that were produced in this context, aside from being made of paper, follow Syro-Mesopotamian codicology, as demonstrated by this most complete Parthian Manichaean hymn book discovered at Kocho. The texts are arranged here in one column. They all concern hymns that are related to the Bema festival, a spring festival that commemorated Mani's death and expressed hope for his second coming. This is a small vertical codex that features its texts in a single column with a red or blue set of headers running along the upper margin, which read across the facing pages to identify the content of the text beneath them. based on Walter Henning's edition in 1936, it is clear that the two surviving choirs from this book, of 15 bifolia in each, were most likely sandwiched between two additional choirs. In addition to this little booklet, the earliest dated codex fragments is what I'd like to bring to your attention from the Uyghur era. This is a Parthian bifolio that retains a colophon which gives the date 755 when the book was begin to be made in the Manistan of Kucha. On these pages too, Syro-Mesopotamian scribal and bookmaking practices are evident. Manichaean pictorial art from Uyghur East Central Asia preserves a great variety of mediums and formats, including some wall paintings and hanging scrolls, almost all of which are in the Chinese style. The majority of the artistic remains, however, are found from Kocho in painted books that follow Syro-Mesopotamian codicology. The largest group, with 85 items, these are all fragments, 85 fragments, that is, come from illuminated manuscripts that are fragments of service books made as vertical codices. Besides texts, these books contain images that are oriented sideways, that is, in a 90-degree angle in relation to the writing. Although what these paintings show is not my concern today, it is important to note that many of the illustrations in them were adopted from Mani's Book of Pictures and do not actually illustrate or visually comment upon the contents of the associated texts, and vice versa, the texts do not explain the images. Otherwise, the overall construction of the codex and the layout of the texts follows the scribal and bookmaking practices of late ancient and early medieval Syro-Mesopotamia. All currently known illustrated Manichaean examples from Kocho follow this design. An analogous practice, as we shall see later, is attested only by some of the earliest remains of Armenian and, to a lesser degree, Syriac Christian gospel books. Besides such illuminated manuscripts, the remains of Uyghur Manichaean painted books include four fragments of solely pictorial books. Since picture books are known only in connection with the Book of Mani's canonical paintings, these fragments are best explained as remnants of Uyghur-era editions of the Book of Pictures. Let me show you how they look like, starting with this fragment on the screen. The most informative among them about format is this paper fragment in a horizontal hand scroll. It retains the original height from a spliced portion of its hand scroll, where two paper sheets were glued to one another, overlapping one another. It also contains a decorative border and part of a blue background from a diagram of figures standing on lotus supports arranged in a mandala-like configuration. The most damaged among the four is this piece of a painted and gilded parchment that retains the upper part of a crescent halo, often seen in other examples of Manichaean art surrounding figures of deities. Although parchment as a material all but disappeared from Manichaean bookmaking during the Uyghur era, this fragment confirms its continued use. It might have belonged, however, to a much older pre-Uyghur edition of the Book of Pictures. Another fragment that preserved parts of one scene from a solely pictorial paper roll documents the depiction of a fundamental theme in Mani's teaching, the four primary prophets seated around the light mind. It retains a small section from the upper part of a diagram conceived in a hierarchical manner, centering on a large deity surrounded by four lesser-ranking figures, one of which was the historical Buddha. Based on textual sources about Mani's teachings, the four side figures can be identified as Mani, Jesus, Zoroaster, and Shakyamuni. The main figure, portrayed on a larger scale and beneath a canopy flanked by the sun and the moon, can be identified as the deity who inspires the prophets and motivates their actions, known as the light mind, the divine messenger of God in Manichaeism. The fourth and the last currently known picture book fragment is a double-sided torn piece of paper that derived from a solely pictorial codex. One of the pages of this codex portrayed a didactic icon of the Light Maiden with a Sasanian iconography, including a multi-layered crescent halo decorated with a hovering crown and originally 12 tiny female busts. Icons of deities, and specifically the Light Maiden, are noted in connection with the Book of Pictures in Cephalion 7, which conveys that such icons aided the disciples in learning to recognize deities in the afterlife. Turning this folio reveals an analogous horizontal orientation of an analogous composition with a central deity, this time under an arch. In light of its original edge and symmetrical design, this folio is best explained as part of a sorry pictorial horizontal codex whose pages were bound along their shorter sides, a book format that was popular in West Asia until the 10th century. These four fragments together supply valuable information that Mani's Book of Pictures impacted the formation of illuminated manuscripts. As this diagram illustrates, there is a correlation in scale and layout between the images surviving in picture books and the images in illuminated manuscripts that have canonical contents. In addition to their canonical content, now their scale and layout give further evidence that these illustrations originated in Mani's Book of Pictures, that is the ones that are in illuminated manuscripts. Clearly, the solely pictorial books of the Manichaeans are not Uyghur-era inventions. They too originate with the rest of the Manichaean book culture, with Mani himself, and maintain Syro-Mesopotamian codicological characteristic. This point brings us to the last comparative part of my lecture, which first we'll consider evidence about the horizontal hand scroll. Aside from the Manichaean context, the pictorial role is surprisingly little documented in ancient sources. Its earliest Roman record dates from about 150 years before Mani. It is referenced in the sculptural program of Trajan's Victory Column, where a continuous spiral frieze winds 23 times from base to top across a 35-meter-tall shaft, mimicking the design of a continuous pictorial roll. Another record of a Roman pictorial roll is a 12th or maybe 13th century copy of a map containing useful information about the most traveled places and roads of the empire between the 1st and the 4th centuries, starting with Spain and England and France on the left, continuing with the Mediterranean region, followed by West Asia in the middle, and concluding with the Indian Peninsula and Ceylon on the right. This map was intended to be carried along on a journey, much like Mani's Book of Pictures. This medieval copy consists of 11 parchment leaves that originally were spliced together to form a continuous roll 34 centimeters high and 675 centimeters long. It is possible that the Book of Pictures as a pictorial roll had similar proportion, so 34 centimeters high and really, really 20 times as long as the height. Closest in time to the Uyghur fragments is a Byzantine imperial illuminated manuscript from the 10th century that combines a pictorial program with some biblical passages on a parchment scroll about the prophet Joshua. The origin of this Joshua role is best explained today either as a copy of a late ancient prototype transmitted via intermediaries, as proposed by Meir Shapiro in 1951, or more recently, as maybe an antiquarian copy of a 10th century original, as proposed by John Loudon in 2002. While some evidence for contextualizing Mani's pictorial role does come from 3rd century Mesopotamia, from the pictorial program of the synagogue of Dura Europos, located about a 10-day walking distance from where Mani lived. Here, originally about 60, mostly narrative scenes from the Hebrew Bible were arranged in three horizontal registers and circling the meeting hall and functioning as a visual library. It is most unlikely that these scenes, such as the one with the story of the baby Moses, were copied from a Jewish pictorial roll, since there is no evidence for such an object outside of the Manichaean community at this time. Nevertheless, the presentation of these murals arguably echoes the arrangement of images in a pictorial roll. This observation becomes especially significant in light of Ephrem's passage that noted a pictorial role in connection with Mani, who was active across Mesopotamia at the time when the murals were added to this synagogue. Another, albeit indirect, evidence about the existence of pictorial roles in late ancient Mesopotamia, in Manichaean context, is preserved by a sideways-oriented set of illustrations found on the verso of a small folio fragment from an Uyghur-era Manichaean service book. When turned into the picture viewing direction, we notice two plaintiffs stripped to their loincloths and one judge, or maybe a guard, on the left. Their figures become clearly discernible next to a side margin on this fragmentary painting. What is left here constitutes one episode from a series of scenes which together depicted Mani's teachings about the judgment of the catechumen after death. Along the left edges of the fragment, the shoulder of a man facing to the left confirms an adjacent scene. The gold registers visible above and below the figures confirm that the pictorial program was organized in three rows on this page. As this reconstruction diagram shows, each register could have featured two, three, or four subscenes in any combinations, resulting a minimum of six or a maximum of 12 subscenes distributed next to one another and across three registers beneath one another, as if they had been adopted to this codex page from a horizontal roll. The hypothesis of a scroll prototype behind this image is supported by the 92nd chapter of the Kephaliah, which confirms that judgment after death was depicted in Mani's Book of Pictures. The 92nd chapter of the Kephaliah is a long chapter. It discusses the depiction of the judgment after death in Mani's Book of Pictures, with the aim to familiarize the disciples with various aspects of the judgment process. It showed the death of, according to the text, it showed the death of the catechumen, how he shall be released from his body. It showed the judgment, how he shall be brought before the judge and sat before the judge and tried, as the text says. It also showed the fate of the righteous, how he shall be attained, how he shall attain the land of light, and also showed the fate of the sinner, how he shall be thrown into Gehenna, where he shall wander for eternity. The didactic function is also documented in the Kephaliah 92. We learn that the image was displayed in front of the pupils. The disciples were seated in front of it and stood up to ask a question. The image functioned as a visual aid of the instruction. Mani pointed to parts of it, just as the disciples referenced it in their questions. In addition, the efficacy of visual learning is conveyed from the pupil's point of view in Kefalonian 92, explaining the advantage of being exposed to images about salvation and stressing the importance of learning to recognize events and deities in the afterlife based on their portrayal in the Book of Pictures. The same question from the instructor's point of view is addressed by Ephrem in his prose refutation when he quotes Mani's rationale for why he made his Book of Pictures. Let the one who hears about them, that is the teachings, verbally, also see them in the Book of Pictures. Let the one who is unable to learn them from the words, learn them from the pictures. Speaking as a teacher, Mani distinguishes between auditory and visual learning in this passage. He states that those who were good auditory learners among his followers could easily understand and absorb what they heard. But to benefit those who learn easier through visual means, he made the Book of Pictures. Analogous to the function of Mani's painting is the contemporaneous painted synagogue at Dura. Once the biblical scenes were added to its walls around 244, this synagogue became a location where teaching with images and visual learning could also take place. As a permanent display, the biblical panels were set up to aid these practices. They were defined very much with the viewer in mind, painted on a scale large enough to be visible from across the room, and starting at a height just above the heads of the people seated in the second row on the benches to assure an unobstructed view. The practical purpose of these features starts making better sense when the meeting hall is viewed as a place of teaching and its narrative images as didactic tools. But there is also a second book format that I have to address before our time is over today. And the second book format, the horizontal codex, known among the Manichaeans for storing and displaying pictures from Uyghur records, is attested by comparative evidence from early medieval Mesopotamia in the arts of other religions. Its employment for texts is documented by the Kufic Qurans of Abbasid Iraq and Eastern Iran. Its possible use for storing narrative paintings may be preserved in Armenian context, in Armenian Christian gospel books associated with the region of Melitene. As this map shows, these two locations are quite close to the Manichaean activities. Kufa in southern Iraq provides the name of the style of writing in the Arabic script within the Qurans of horizontal codex format at this time. And Melitene in northern Mesopotamia, noted in connection with the production of some of the Armenian examples, labels the group of gospel books with sideways frontispieces that were made roughly around this time. During the 9th and 10th centuries, horizontal codices dominated Islamic book production in Abbasid West Asia. Such Qurans were most often attributed to Syria, Iraq, and Eastern Iran. While they are never illustrated, luxurious editions are often adorned with gilded calligraphy as well as geometrical designs and stylized plant motifs. These plant motifs are oriented sideways and resemble stylized trees, bushes, or palms, the latter of which referred to as palmettes. They are not only ornamental, but also have an important practical function. They mark the surah headers along the outer margins, as seen in the upper example. At the start of the book, they may be used in a decorative program of the frontispieces as seen in the lower example. Either way, they are always oriented sideways, paralleling the direction of the writing and the overall make of this horizontal codex. Geometrical designs in these Qurans frame the surah headers or this solely decorative frontal matter or finishing matter in the book, as seen on these two examples that employ chain link and rope patterns to form a border. It is well established that these designs allow us to trace the changes between two formats of Qurans, from earlier horizontal to later vertical formats in Iraq. David James has argued that interlocking circles, which were developed during the 9th century as frontispieces and finishpieces for Kufic Qurans in the horizontal format, continued to be used in later vertical formats after the 10th century. Besides such Kufic Qurans, the Melitene Gospels seem to contain evidence about a similar change between horizontal and vertical codex format in the region. Melitene was the multi-ethnic regional center near the upper Euphrates in the Taurus Mountain, in and around which Armenian communities settled from the Arts Runic Kingdom between 1020 and 1066, so roughly around the middle of the 11th century. Although the contextualized codicological study of these works of art is new to the field and in need of further research, some basic facts about them are already clear. Analogously to the Manichaean case, the sideways-oriented illustrations of Melitene Gospels seem to preserve the memory of a solely pictorial horizontal codex design. So let's take a look at how these Melitene Gospels look like. The Melitene Gospels are vertical codices, as to be expected from a group of Armenian manuscripts that were produced between the 9th and 14th centuries. As customary in early Syriac and Greek illustrated Gospels as well, these Armenian examples begin with Eusebius's letter to Carpianus that prefaces the 10 canon tables of Eusebius with the aim to correlate the content of the four Gospels. I'm just showing you one example here that survives from a set of 10 of these canon tables. After the canon table in the book comes a full set of narrative scenes depicting select events from the life of Christ, oriented sideways, with the figures' heads are towards the outer margin, so that the alignments mirror one another on the facing pages. Such an orientation does not lend itself to a comfortable viewing experience. The book is to be turned 90 degrees counterclockwise to view the paintings on the recto pages, and turned again 90 degrees clockwise to view them on the versos. This impractical presentation suggests that these paintings were added to the Gospel books in this way for a reason likely defined by their prototypes. Such scenes from the life of Christ are followed by one page that contains the combined portraits of the four evangelists, also oriented sideways. And this page faces the start of the first Gospel text, the Gospel of Matthew. As was the case of most early examples of illuminated Gospels in the Melitene group, the texts of the four Gospels in general in early Gospel books remain unillustrated. There is no illuminations, no illustrations in them. In these Armenian books, the independence of the image from the text is clearly evidenced in terms of format. The full-page compositions utilize the vertical codex page horizontally, while the text utilizes the codex folio vertically. Moreover, the paintings are kept in a group, confined together to the prefatory matter of the Gospel books, as if to provide an abbreviated visual overview of the life of Christ that are detailed in the texts. But the independence of the image from the biblical text is also evident in terms of content, as signaled by such striking examples, such as the depiction of four instead of three magi in the adoration, the depiction of a well instead of Mary's house as the location of the Annunciation, and even featuring a tower-like tomb instead of a cave in The Raising of Lazarus, which I'm not illustrating here. Such independent iconography, harmonized story, and non-biblical narrative elements combined with the grouping of the scenes as frontispieces in sideways orientation together lend strong support to John Loudon's theory, according to which depictions of life of Christ in gospel books did not originate as illustrations within the texts of ancient manuscripts, but first developed instead in various other solely pictorial media independent from the biblical text. Well, John Loudon does not think of picture books when he writes about this question. He tends to emphasize decorations of walls in churches, either painted or in mosaic formats, and also thinks about pilgrimage art, smaller objects that contains scenes from the life of Christ that are used in connection with pilgrimage. So far, I have collected 44 Eastern Christian gospel books with sideways illustrations, 30 Armenian, and 14 Syriac examples, most of which I have examined in person, including the gospel book to which one of these scenes belongs in the collection of the Matanadaran Library in Yerevan. This Annunciation scene is found on the sole surviving folio from the prefatory matter of a now-lost gospel book that was historically cropped to fit and then sewn into another codex. The recto of this folio contains the last canon table, and it shows the same design, same signs of cropping. And this fact clearly confirms that this page could not have come from a picture book. It came from the same design of a codex. So the same signs are visible on the verso with the cropping and the stitching. The sideways oriented scene echoes a regional page design also employed by the makers of horizontal Kufic Korans produced contemporaneously in Abbasid Syro-Mesopotamia until the late 10th century. Both designs have horizontal proportion, that is, they fit their respective contents within the horizontally aligned folio. Although one is solely textual, while the other is solely pictorial, the two are comparable to one another in a sense that they both employ chain link frames and palmette motifs to define their respective contents on the codex page. Thus, these Islamic and Eastern Christian examples display regional characteristics and both indicate a change of format in Syro-Mesopotamian book art. Produced under Uyghur patronage, contemporaneously with the previously considered Abbasid, Islamic, and Armenian Christian codices, I argue that the fragments of Manichaean illustrated service books document an analogous change of format. They demonstrate that the horizontal scenes of Mani's Book of Pictures, which were initially exclusive to solely pictorial scrolls and subsequently to solely pictorial horizontal codices, became adapted to vertical codex design during the Uyghur era in order to provide illustrations to luxurious editions of service books used during the middle of the 8th until the early 11th centuries. In light of such codicological comparative evidence, art historical research for the first time is in strong position to consider regionally specific developments of book culture across Syro-Mesopotamia during early medieval times. Based on the evidence presented here today, future studies of this subject must include material not only from Abbasid Korans, but also from lesser-known materials, such as the sideways-oriented images of Armenian gospel books and Uyghur Manichaean service books, all of which belong to a larger Syro-Mesopotamian book culture that stretched from the Levant to the edges of East Central Asia. Thank you for your attention.